frankly, were quite surprised at Kansas running mate. After 12, 14 weeks on the campaign trail, are you still surprised? You think you've helped the president?
Oh, I think so. I've been out on the firing line every day, and I can't say that what I've done is close the polls, but the polls have closed, and we've picked up strength in the Midwest. We tell the same message everywhere we go, and I hope I've been of help. I guess the real test will be next week.
Maybe that's the point, though. You say you're not sure whether you've helped close the polls. Those things have to be factored in. Do you think that there's any key area where you've helped the president, given him more support than he might have had on his own?
Well, I have a guess, and then again, who knows? I mean, we think we've helped everywhere, but I think we've helped particularly in agricultural areas and probably with veterans groups and handicapped Americans, areas where I've had a strong interest. I think also those areas that feel strongly about our defense. But again, to say in blood that that's what I've done, I don't go around making statements that I can't back up.
In Presque Isle this morning, you inferred in part of your speech that you were quite concerned that your friend Fritz Mondale would be a heartbeat away from the presidency. Did you mean to imply that having Carter and Mondale in the White House would be a security risk to this country?
No, I didn't say that. I just said he has a very bad voting record on defense. It's there. Maybe he'll change it. I called on Carter last week to assure the American people that Mondale would have no role in our defense matters. But he does. He has a very strong anti-defense record. It means, of course, a lot as far as our own defense is concerned. In addition to that, it means a lot as far as jobs are concerned. Jobs for peace. We're talking about peace, nothing else. Here's a man who supported the Vietnam War until the Republicans came in. And since that time, has been, I think, against every new weapon system. Voted to cut the defense budget year after year after year, even beyond what the committee cuts were. And I just find that hard to understand.
But you were getting away from the question. Do you think that Senator Mondale would be a risk, a security risk to this country?
I didn't say it was a security risk. That's something else entirely different. I say, from the standpoint of his voting record, if the Mondales prevailed in the Senate, unfortunately they did not because there were enough Democrats and Republicans who voted the other way, we wouldn't be as strong today as we are.
All right, you're not the only one who's concerned about the ascension question in its endorsement this morning of the Carter-Mondale ticket. The New York Times had only one line about you. It said that it must be said that in Ford's selection of the man to succeed him, should that be necessary, Mr. Ford has inexcusably put the country at risk. What's your response to that, and what do you think of the press coverage of your campaign in general?
I think generally it's been good. The New York Times has been opposed to us from the start. They started writing bad pieces about me the day after I was nominated. Never talked to me, but just started writing without any basis in fact. Never did sit down and discuss it. That's their right. It's an editorial comment. I assume others may have the same view about Senator Mondale.
What about the rest of the press? You don't commiserate with them and talk back and forth in the campaign?
Oh, we talk back and forth, yeah.
You feel as though you've had sympathetic or fair treatment?
Well, I don't think we want sympathetic treatment. I think we've had the hard questions. We haven't always agreed with the stories, but they haven't always agreed probably what I've said. I mean, if they write their stories, and I'll make my speeches. And I don't think we all get on the plane each time to have a big confab. You know, that's not the purpose. We're in a very serious race, very serious business. My role is not to satisfy the press. My role is to tell the American people what I can about the campaign and tell them about what I think might be the dangers of a Carter-Mondale ticket. If the press doesn't agree with that, you know, they can write something else.
Final question. Back when you came to Boston in September, there were some scheduling problems, some advance problems. Today there was some grousing by some of the local Republican candidates running for office that they had their own things planned, parades, etc. Do you think there's been any problem in the organization of your own campaign?
Oh, I don't think so. We were very happy to come to Boston, and I, you have information I don't have. I don't work on the schedule, but we think we put together a good campaign. Campaign gas that plagued Governor Carter right along, and that's one reason he's probably in trouble now. We started on the road the day after our nomination. We hit the road running. We organized our campaign in the air. We think we've done an outstanding job. We've had good people helping us. We've made mistakes. That even happens probably in your station from time to time.
It does. Thank you, sir.
By the comment this morning at the airport, I didn't hear too clearly, did you say that you had some reservations about World War II, about fighting World War II?
Well, not fighting it. No, I think about it every day, you know. I have reservations about all war. I think that's I think about World War II because that's where I was personally involved, and every time I, without getting personal, which sounds like flag waving, when I have to struggle to button my shirt each day because I don't have good feeling in my left hand and don't use my right, you know, you got to think about how it happened. You have certain reservations about how it happened, but I would guess that I'm fair testimony that I did my bit for my country.
I think you were relating it, though, to the Democratic administration in office at that time.
Oh, that was with reference to their constant castigation of President Ford for Watergate and always citing unemployment figures based on a wartime economy. But see, they're very tender. That's all right for them to do that, and those who follow them, the liberals in this country. But to even suggest that we go back and discuss anything else in the past, you know, they don't like that at all. They're very tender. It's funny how they can dish it out but never learn to take it. The liberals in this country are great at dishing it out. But once you raise anything about them, that's heresy. You're not supposed to do that.
In the New York Times endorsements yesterday, they seem to be unusually hostile to you, or perhaps...
They have been, right.
Why? Well,
I don't know. I mean, I've never talked to them. They've never talked to me. They started on me the day after I was nominated. Vicious editorials, vicious comments by both Mr. Wicker and Mr. Reston. And I guess this is their right, but I never even heard of them. I'd heard of them, but they'd never heard of me until that day I was nominated. So I assume it must be based on something other than fact. But they're not for President Ford and haven't been for President Ford. That's been obvious from the start. They finally acknowledged that yesterday, and that's certainly a right they have. That's their editorial page. But it doesn't come as any great surprise to us that they dislike me or dislike President Ford.
The tone seemed a little more light on President Ford than it did on you.
Oh, well, that's a matter of tone, I guess. I can't answer it. You'd have to ask whoever wrote it. I think that'd be the best source of that.
This is your second trip to Rhode Island, which only has 4 electoral votes.
That's plenty.
Well, did you come here for those 4 electoral votes, or did you do it as a perhaps a courtesy to the local Republican Party? I noticed that John Chafee, the Republican senatorial candidate, was not here today.
I just had lunch with John Chafee. He's with us now, and he's been out. He's going to win that Senate race, which we're very pleased to hear, and we're going to elect a governor in this state, Mr. Taft, and I just happen to be here because we feel it's an area that President Ford can carry. 4 votes, I know, but you had 4 in Maine and 4 in Rhode Island, and we're going to go from here to New York, and there are more than 4 there. We go from there to Pennsylvania. But every state's important to the Ford Dole ticket, and we're going to keep working.
Have you given up trying in Massachusetts, for example?
I'm not scheduled to go there. I don't know what the polls show, but it shows we've almost cut the lead in half in Massachusetts. We're still behind.
Can we have one more cover shot?
Yeah, sure.
All right. Senator, I have one question in particular, this being Veterans Day, and in light of Secretary Kissinger's disclosure yesterday about the renewed efforts on the part of the United States for better relations with Vietnam, what effect, if any, do you think this new direction may have on those missing Americans in Vietnam?
Well, I think it depends. If they're talking now about accounting for the MIAs, it'd be a step in the right direction, because there are still hundreds of families in this country concerned about their sons and husbands, and so far we've had little cooperation from the North Vietnamese. Mm-hmm. But that's the price. If they want to normalize relations or have any relation with us, that's got to come first. That's got to be an integral part of it. And I didn't read what Secretary Kissinger said, but just on my information about the MIAs that we still have hopes for, it's going to hinge on their reaction to that problem.
Mm-hmm. There also was an announcement that there would be a meeting in December in Europe, a NATO conference. And at that time, they would be discussing this, but the fact that Kissinger would not be acting as the mediator, is this any indication that perhaps the president is giving us another clue that Kissinger could be out after the elections?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I don't think that's a clue. And, of course, not having read the story, it's been hard to speculate. But I thought I read all the morning papers to be prepared, but I didn't remember reading that. I don't know why he would not be there, whether it's a matter of what level the negotiations are, or he'd come in later. I don't know of any plans for Secretary Kissinger to leave, sir.
Well, has the President been thinking about making a change?
Not as far as I know. He's been strong in support of Henry Kissinger. I've had no inkling, haven't discussed Secretary Kissinger's future at all with the President.
Let me ask you one final question. Perhaps all the questions have already been asked.
Well, who knows?
I think perhaps the other thing is people are concerned about a choice. Some critics are saying that if you go with President Ford, the presidency will be safe, but you'll be sorry. The big word is lack of leadership. What is your reaction to this, Senator?
Well, I've been saying, I'm going to stress it all this week, it's going to be our theme, that we are at peace in the world. And what's so wrong with that? I'm going to ask the audience, anything wrong with being at peace in the world? Your sons are at home, they're not being drafted, they're not being sent off somewhere. The economy still has some rough spots, but it's picking up. There are 88 million people working. You know, the unemployment rates are down. They're down in the state of Rhode Island. It just seems to me that we're on the right track. We've cut inflation in half. It's not good. It's not perfect, but we're working at it. We're getting there. And I think it's because of leadership, because of President Ford's leadership.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very, very much. Monsignor DeMeo, Senator Dole, ladies and gentlemen who are gathered here today to participate in what I think is a great ceremony. We are going today to dedicate a park, and we're going to dedicate a portion of this park to a man who I have grown to love and respect over the years. It's going to be dedicated to a man who I believe has contributed an awful lot to this area of the city of Providence. As everyone knows, this Corliss Park is a 5-acre recreational complex, which is the largest urban park of its kind in Rhode Island. And it was paid for with $349,000 in federal revenue sharing funds and also from the Bureau of Outdoor Recreation. The special speaker we have for the dedication of DeMeo Field here in the city of Providence, Senator Robert Dole.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Mr. Mayor, Your Honor, and distinguished guests, and above all, Monsignor DeMeo, I'm very pleased to be here. I'm proud to be here today, as I was in Kansas City when I introduced your mayor, and he made reference to Italians, but Italo-Americans, and he corrected what I thought was a rather serious blunder, but he did it in a very nice way, and I'm very proud to be here. I can also say that with those who do a disservice to Monsignor DeMeo, they think they're practicing the First Amendment. One thing to frustrate the
efforts of those of us who are in public office, we understand that. It's quite another to disparage an event like this when we're honoring a great man for service he's done to this community. And I just hope that despite the noise on the right, that you'll understand. I know Monsignor understands. You know, I'm not unfamiliar with Italian Americans, or for that matter, with the land their fathers came from. We once fought part of a war over there for freedom, for them and for us. And I am proud to have fought there for all who cherish freedom and liberty. And I might add that we're not here today to talk about wars. We're not here to talk about veterans. But the fact is, today is Veterans Day, and to many Americans of all extractions are veterans, or are the children, wives, and parents of veterans. For us to overlook this day or its meaning would be a tragedy. Too many Americans have fought and bled and died in this century for us to overlook it. Indeed, had Americans not fought and bled for freedom for us and our children, we would probably not be here dedicating this portion of Corliss Park, nor neither would the demonstrators have a right to stand here and make noises and interrupt your program. We're dedicating this park at a time when America is at peace, when all Americans have their rights, all Americans have their obligations. No men are fighting or dying anywhere in the world. And I think that's worth noting. And this is Veterans Day. Next year, we're really going to celebrate on the right day, on November 11 next year, but it's still being celebrated this time now. And we salute the veterans of America's wars. But we do it at a time when there is no war because America is strong and American leadership is dedicated to peace through strength, and to the idea that a strong America cannot be forced into war. And we want a strong America for the sake of peace, and that's what it's all about in America. And if I can not make a partisan reference, but say that this is why President Ford has fought in the Congress to maintain a defense establishment strong enough to keep the peace. There is no peace through weakness except the peace of slavery or of the grave. There can only be peace through strength, a strong defense establishment, and even more important, a people who are strong morally and strong physically, who are willing to bear any burden, pay any price to keep America strong and free. In England, there is a saying that Britain's wars were won on the playing fields of Eton. Well, I don't know where America's wars have been won except on the battlefield, but I do know that the playing fields of America's public parks have helped build generations of sturdy Americans who have always been willing to fight for freedom and for their country. Our parks are an integral part of what is right with America. Baseball fields, such as the one we are dedicating today, is a part of Corliss Park, have helped build a nation of competitors who understand that second place is not good enough, whether it's in a baseball game or in a dangerous world. The young people who have participated in all kinds of competitive sports in America have gone on to help build a nation and to keep it strong. That is one reason why this park and why this baseball field are so important. We're dedicating here more than just a piece of ground and facilities. We're dedicating a piece of the American way of life. And I think it's fitting that it's being dedicated to and in honor of a man like Monsignor DeMayo. And I'm very proud to be here for that reason, if for no other reason today, anywhere in this country. Buddy has told us about the Monsignor and what he's done for this area, what he's done for his church, and what he's done for the neighborhood. You live here. You know what he's done. There's not much I can add, but we salute him for his work in the community. And let me add a personal note here. As one of those in the United States Senate who worked for and voted for federal revenue sharing, I'm proud to see it put to such good use. $340,000 in federal revenue sharing funds have gone into this park. As the mayor has said and Buddy Cianci has said, it's a tribute to the fact that the local communities and the state and the federal government work together as a partnership. So I would only say, finally, that I'm very proud to be an American. I'm very proud to have an opportunity to stand up before other Americans and say we're the greatest country on the face of the earth, and we are. And I'm very proud to say that we're the hope of the free world, and we are. And I very hopefully say that, and we are the hope of those who may be enslaved, but those who yearn for freedom, and those who want freedom, and those in the world who want America to remain strong, so that their hope for freedom will not go out. And we have that obligation to everyone who wants freedom, everyone who wants liberty in the world. We know what it is. We don't know what it is to lose it. And some who yearn for freedom have lost it. And they look to us for hope, and they look to us for example. So, Mr. Mayor and Monsignor DeMayo, I'm very grateful for the opportunity to be here and participate in this ceremony. I might say, as you mentioned, Buddy, that I am from Russell, Kansas. And senators from Russell, Kansas have little opportunity to visit places like Providence, Rhode Island. But there is another job out there that might bring me back here again sometime in the next 4 years. Thank you very much. That's all right.
Straight, too, yeah.
That door?
Yeah.
It's a lot better for you than peanut butter. For one thing, it doesn't stick to the roof of your mouth, and I think probably... Well, we're very pleased to be here, and we're very pleased to land. We tried landing in Albany, but we didn't make that, so we're very happy to be here, and we're going to make a little visit over to Herkimer just to make up for the one we didn't make in Albany, so it's a deep pleasure to be here. I'm very proud to be running with President Ford, and President Ford's going to carry the state of New York on November 2nd, and you're going to help him carry the state of New York. And that means victory. It also means the second, so we want to keep both in mind, and I want to talk to you just a few minutes about why I think we ought to elect President Ford and send Carter back to Plains where he understands what's going on. There's been a lot of development in Plains, and they're going to need a lot of good men down there to carry on the next few years, and I think that'd be a very fine place for Governor Carter to take a look at some of the issues, reflect on some of the issues, maybe come to grips with the issues, and maybe even have a position on the issues that we could all appreciate and understand. And I say this in all seriousness because I've been trying to find out all over this country just what his stands were on the issues. He's talked about taxation. He's castigated President Ford. He said he doesn't have any leadership ability. He's not a man of compassion. He doesn't care about the old. He doesn't care about the sick. He doesn't care about the poor. Well, you know that's not the case, and I know that's not the case. I think Governor Carter knows that's not the case, but there's a lot of excessive campaign rhetoric been coming out of Plains, Georgia. And let me talk to you just about a few things that I think the American people appreciate about President Ford and don't understand about Governor Carter. It's been said that Carter may get all the undecided vote because he's so undecided himself. Now, I don't think that's going to happen, but I suggest that it could happen unless we go to work and go to work in Utica and everywhere else in the great state of New York, because the polls indicate that he has a slight lead across this state. Let's take, first of all, his tax program for Americans. He said in an AP interview, said first of all, he didn't think Americans wanted their taxes lowered. Now, is there anyone here who doesn't want their taxes lowered? Just hold up your hand. We'll get a doctor to you as soon as we can. But that's what Governor Carter said. Americans don't want their taxes lowered. He also said that all income ought to be treated the same. Well, if you're a farmer or retired and have bought some stock and thinking about selling that stock, you're not going to get the capital gains treatment. You're going to pay straight across the board. It's going to almost double your tax on the sale of your land or your stock you may have bought in some corporation, or if you're a farmer on your breeding stock. He also said in that same interview that those above the median income would have their taxes increased. He didn't know at the time what the median income was, but it's $14,000 per American family. That's middle-income America he's talking about. And I haven't found many middle-income Americans who think they can stand another tax increase. They'd rather have a tax reduction as promised by President Ford, as proposed by President Ford, and as Don Mitchell knows, is turned down by the Liberal Democrat Congress. And we'll have some tax reform if we elect more Republicans and send President Ford back to the White House for four more years. I've got a tight schedule. You can. Where are you from? Salina?
If you don't want to see Carter elected, these are the issues well, you must address.
Why don't you speak right after I finish? I've got a tight schedule. Looks like you could be here for a long time, and I've got to go on.
So, what are you afraid of?
Well, I'm not afraid of you, if that's what you're suggesting. Well, why don't you wait?
This is what the working class of this country wants to see you address. Well,
get her
out
of here.
Would you please be quiet? Well, I didn't expect this endorsement, but we do have the right of free speech, but the other people have a right to be heard, and that's part of it. So we'll go on, and then after I leave, you can talk all you want. I think, well, just be quiet, will you?
Mr. Ford, the mainstream Republicans in this country have got a responsibility to the people of this country. It's a well-known fact right now.
What, do you got two of you here? Is this an act? Well, where are the others? How many are there? Oh, three of you? Oh, well, you're for Carter, you say. Well, they're for Ford. Well, they're not for anybody?
We're for Lyndon LaRouche, the U.S. Labor
Party. Oh, well.
No, you.
Well.
Yeah,
get your own rally. I'm.
You know.
Not with you helping us. No, not with you helping us. Please don't help us too much. You know. Oh, they're all right. Well, don't forget to vote on November 2nd either. You'll probably be busy making a speech somewhere. Well, I'm back to where I was. Where was I? Well, I'm in Utica, right. And I...
Utica, Rome.
Right, Utica, Rome, right. Well, that's right, yeah. wrong, yes. Well, well, you win a few and lose a few. We're going to win this one. Why don't you go to his rally instead of mine? He can't get a crowd anyway. You'd help him. Well, I'm glad I came anyway. Yeah.
We're glad you came.
I do know where I am, and I do know where I'm going. We're going to win on November 2nd. Now, I was talking about Governor Carter and tax reform, and I remember what he said in New York City the night of his acceptance speech. He said our national tax system was a disgrace. Of course, he didn't tell you the Democrats had controlled the Congress for the past 22 years. And the Liberal Democrats, most of that 22 years. He also didn't tell you at the time, of course, I guess he didn't think that was a disgrace, the fact that he had taken $41,000 off his income tax. That was called the investment tax credit. I'm for it. I just want Governor Carter to suggest, is that a loophole or is that not a loophole? I don't know how many, I assume a lot of you took $41,000 off your income tax in this audience. And you understand how it helps the free enterprise system or the peanut business or whatever business you may be in. But I just say it's not enough for Governor Carter to stand before an audience and say, while he's moralizing and posturizing, saying, well, I'm pleased to be here among you average Americans, that we've all worked hard for a living, and I just took $41,000 off my income tax. But I'm going to reform the tax system because it's a disgrace.